You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Jim, the regular season is just about over as we tape this on a Tuesday before the Kings wrap up their season with two games in Colorado. But all 16 playoff teams have been determined, and the Stanley Cup playoffs will start Saturday, May 15th. What is on your mind as we reach the end of the regular season?
Well, for me, it's focusing on the Los Angeles Kings. That's what we try not to do as much on this podcast, but just because of where we are in the schedule, we're at the end. Normally, without the COVID issues, the schedule would be over right now, and we'd be on our way into playoffs right now. But just because I think it was an interesting season, I think that going into the season, we all felt it was, I'm speaking for the generality here. I'm sure there's exceptions along the way, but most people felt Vegas, Colorado, and the Blues. It ended up being Vegas, Colorado, and the Wild. The Blues get in. But then, you know, I'm just looking back again on the Kings season. I think the new format for the divisional makeup because of COVID, I thought that was a benefit for the Kings and its chances to make the playoffs. I think through 70% of the season, the Kings were still there and it looked good. And I think that created expectations, which leads to more disappointment. If you really didn't believe you had any chance whatsoever, you're not disappointed at the end. But you know, again, I think the Kings, certainly I felt because of the divisional schedule lineup, the format, they had a better chance this year than past years to make it. Saw some strides, but just to answer your question, I think that timing has always been the issue with when the Kings are going to take the next, not the next step, the big step. And I think the Kings are entering that period now. So that's why they're on my mind. They're on my mind with, okay, I think I have a pretty good idea of what's going on with some of the players. Most of the players, I got a good read on them. I evaluated them myself. And now is it time? And I think the Kings are entering a window now where it might be time to look outside to help inside.
Is this because some certain unnamed player in Buffalo signaled he may not want to be there anymore?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think that's...
Because I agree with you. I don't think it has anything to do with it either.
Yeah, because...
We're just kind of on that trajectory anyway.
I think Jack Eichel's name was out there before with the Kings, before he went public with statements recently, which hopefully we can touch on a little bit later. It's just the stage that the Kings are in. And I mean, they basically only had 1 year, and it's not even a full year. I'm talking about the Ontario players. You know, you would have liked a full schedule to really get the evaluation there. But I still think that 12 months ago, if you would ask me, I would have said, no, it'd be another year before the Kings decide to make their decisions on whether to, you know, again, try to acquire assets from outside the organization. The one thing that's clear to me is the rebuild is over. That's clear to me. I mean, I think that's clear to most people. But that's a stage that you have to get through both logistically and in your head. You have to get through it. And I think the Kings are through that stage. So that's why I'm very interested on what happens with this summer, the timing. If a lot of big things don't happen, it would probably fit more of my timeline that I had, like I say, a year ago. But I don't know. I'm just looking now. Prospect pool, some of those kids have to be packaged. You have too many of the same type of players. But it's better to have the hand that the Kings have been dealt here because of what they've done to restock the shelves. And now moving forward.
Well, the opportunity is there for the taking. How about that? And I said
salary cap.
Yeah.
You know, all the things are in line. And I don't think that would have changed much either. I don't think, but I'm just wondering now if it is the time.
There's going to be a completely different free agent landscape in the next year or two than there would have been prior to any disruption, because of the assumptions that the salary cap goes up and the assumptions that players will get a certain value. We saw that Taylor Hall's value cratered. And maybe, I don't know if that's a virtue of the pandemic, but you know what? Boston picked him up on the discount, and they might be able to sign him on a discount. Well, maybe the Kings can get a guy on a discount. I don't know if that'll be the case, but it's a buyer's market at this rate because, I mean, Vegas Golden Knights the other night is a perfect example of this. They had to dress 10 forwards and 5 defensemen because they ran out of salary cap room. They are that aggressive and that up against it that they physically couldn't dress 3 players because they would have been in violation of the salary cap. That shows how crazy things have gotten and how players might have to take discounts to stay employed in the National Hockey League.
I'm just looking, we're talking about the next step. I'm just looking right now at Cap Friendly,
mm-hmm.
I think provides an outstanding service.
Oh my God. Where would we be without Cap Friendly? What would we do?
And I'm talking about free agents that would become available now that I think are going to be available, because the number one guy on the list is Ovechkin. I don't think he's going to be available, so I'm not going to include him. Taylor Hall. Patrick Laine. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Mm.
I'm just getting to now. Well, Dougie Hamilton. Again, I see Landeskog's names there, but I just don't see him moving.
He's not going anywhere.
So, you know, it's just Jaden Sam Schwartz. Reinhardt.
Hey, there are a lot of names out there that, like,
it's just interesting, you know.
It's a landscape right now that, like, and it's not just this year, because we've been debating about this off air. It's not just this year. It's next year, too. Because this is not just there's one summer, the Kings take a swing for the fences and that's it. No. Next year, there are going to be other free agents that come up. And there are still going to be teams in a cap nightmare that have to offload assets. Well, you're in a pretty good spot here. But it's what you do with it. That's the most important thing. Right now, Rob Blake, for the 4 years that he's been the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings, he has had two phases. One was he got here with the old group that had pretty much been the team that won the 2 Stanley Cups. Tried to squeeze every last bit out of it. Didn't work. And that included signing Ilya Kovalchuk. All right, phase 2, rebuild. Now we're entering phase 3. This is where, and I'm not at any stage to make any grand pronouncements about it, but this is the most critical stage of Rob Blake's tenure as the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings. Because he has done everything right with regard to the rebuild. He's restocked the cabinet. He's accumulated draft picks. He has highly touted prospects. He has a goaltender of the future. He has a veteran group that he can build around. Now it's the next step.
Yeah, and I think that's always the timing. I think the plan has always been there. Like you just pointed out, the rebuild. Okay, you get through that. Now, the timing, you know where you need to restock. You've looked at, you analyze your position by position by position. You've taken a look at your age groups and how they line up. So when are you going to be a contender? And then what age do you need that grouping to be?
Mm-hmm.
Sprinkling of veterans, younger players cost less money, those types of things. So yes, I think it's the timing is always, well, I could go back 2 years now. I think I probably still use that word timing. When is Rob going to make the decision to go? And
Back then, when was the decision to stop? When was the decision to start the rebuild? And we kind of, you know, when Ilya Kovalchuk's contract was canceled, that was, all right, that's it. We tried, we gave it a swing and didn't work. All right, plan B.
The thing when you are getting rid of veteran players that have had past success, Stanley Cup success, generally speaking, the value to you is greater than the value to others. This biggest example I can bring up, and I hope this is not meant or taken with any disrespect whatsoever, because I'm just thinking, Dustin Brown, he is the all-time king to me. But his value on the open market, 75% of the value I think of with Dustin Brown is because of what he's done for our organization, the heart and soul, the lifelong king. Other teams don't care about that. They care about what can he do for me now. So that's why it's tough, you know, it's tough to go through with, you know, the Kings were trying to get rid of some veteran players. They did, but then there were some guys that they probably would like to have traded for assets and were not able to, because again, the value we put internally on those people, and I'm including myself as a media person, I'm including the fans who watched a guy like Dustin, you know, I'm just using him as what I think is the most poignant example of how value is perceived. And if I can quickly spin around, not this summer, next summer, free agents available. Again, Malkin's on the list. No, not gonna, Subban, no, no.
Maybe,
no.
You never know.
All these guys, I'm just, first name that jumps out, it's great. It's great. I don't think he'll be around because I think he'll be re-signed by then, but. Matthew Tkachuk.
Oh, please make that happen. Please make that happen. I would love that more than anything. People might think I'm crazy. Why would you? Yeah, well, I hate that guy. No, I want that guy on my team. I want the Brad Marchand on my team. I want the Matthew Tkachuk on my team. I want that. An agitator with skill? Are you kidding me?
Then I look at Braden Point. That name jumps out. Philip Forsberg jumps out.
Alexander Barkov is on that list.
Ooh,
Brock
Arnell
Besser.
Nurse is on that list.
Yeah.
I think that the group 2 years from now fits the age range I think the Kings are looking for more so than this year's crop. But again, you're thinking 1 year out. You're thinking 2 year out. You're thinking 3 year out. That's how you're thinking. So that's just... It's right back to the first question you asked. I mean, that's on my mind. It's just like, wow, this is going to be so interesting to watch and exciting to watch.
Yeah. And it's going to be a short offseason too. I mean, we're ending where it would be middle to late second round in mid-May. Yeah. And we're going to have the expansion draft. We're going to have the entry draft. And then training camp is only 4.5 months away. So be ready.
I think there's a little bit of a lull that'll take place. Like teams that want to make trades, if they're blockbuster, you go ahead and you do it anyway. But if you're in a position where you're concerned about who you're going to lose to the expansion draft, you don't make a trade before the expansion draft because then you're just adding another player to your lineup, unless you're, you know, completely trading player for player as opposed to prospects and things. If you take a player on, that means you're going to have to drop someone off your list or someone else will be exposed to the expansion. After the expansion draft, woo!
So you're saying I can go on vacation in early July? Is that what you're saying?
I think after expansion draft, then I think it's going to open up. And I think there's going to be the other thing that will, you know, weigh it down is the flat cap.
Yep.
New
well,
TV
that's,
contract.
That's what makes it more interesting.
Yeah, but new TV contract, maybe you know, some projections.
I'm on the conservative side of the financial aspect of where we're going.
They
know what? I'd like to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. See what I'm saying? The NHL knew what the numbers were going to be on TV before they made the announcement or the projection that there would be a flat cap for 4 to 5 years. They knew that. Wasn't signed yet, but they knew what the ballpark was.
Yeah,
but it still will be. Again, that's where a team like the Kings probably has one more card in the deck, because there's probably 10 teams like the Kings, and then there's 15, 16 that are just, they can make moves, but it's going to be hard. And then there's five or six that are just slammed and they can't.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's
right nice now, to according be. To Cap Friendly, at least for this year, there mm-hmm. are at least 10 who literally have zero cap space.
Right. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Then another 10 that have less than a million. So, yeah.
Or you just, you know, you make sure you guys work on their cardio in the summer and you dress the 10 and 5 for every game.
That's one way to do it. Hey, I'll give them it's creative, I'll tell
work
you that.
Work on that cardio.
We're going to get to some league-wide and division awards. I know you have, and I love your idea in a year like this of selecting divisional-based awards. But I want to get to that in a moment. With the playoff field set, we don't know the exact matchups as we tape this. Some divisions have them set. But I want to get a quick bullet point. I'm going to completely steal from how Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick do it on their terrific 31 Thoughts podcast. But if we haven't watched a ton of games outside of our own division, so we may have incorrect judgment or opinion based on playoff teams. But I want to get just a quick opinion on each team that's in the postseason this year. Not necessarily, are they going to win it? Are they going to you win a first round series, et cetera. Just, you know, kind of what you see out of them right now. Ready?
Oh, yep.
All right. Carolina. Let's start in the Central Division. They will play Nashville in the first round. Carolina.
Balance equals effectiveness.
Relentless is the way. I mean, when we've played them the last couple of years, you could tell that they were building for something. They were relentless. They couldn't put the puck in the back of the net as efficiently as they would like to, but yeah, effectiveness. They've gotten quite effective. How about Florida? Great season for Joel Quenneville. I think that's by points percentage, I could be wrong. I think that's the best season in Panthers franchise history.
Knocking on the door, but I think Mr. Quenneville will get them over the top. I just don't think it's going to be this year.
Just looking back at points percentage, and indeed, this was the best points percentage year in Panthers franchise history. How about Tampa Bay, the defending champs? I'll give you my opinion on Florida. As always, it comes down to the goalie because I think they're a good team. And we'll see what Bobrovsky and Driedger and that whole setup does because it hasn't been Bobrovsky the whole year there. How about Tampa?
Wild card because two new additions coming in basically, which are Stamkos and Kucherov, even though they're not new additions, they're basically considered new additions. I'm just a little concerned with just how it's happened and how it's going to happen. So they're way, way, way above. So you're telling me they got a chance. Way, way above that, but just not as fixed. I think I picked them 3 years previous to them actually winning. This year, I'm just a little bit leery.
I look at it and say they're one of the quieter defending champs we've had in a while. Maybe that's just a virtue of the marketplace or the division even that they're in this year. Vasilevsky was a workhorse for them. He led the league in wins for the fourth straight year. I'm with you. It feels quiet, but maybe that'll change in the postseason.
But it's a wild card to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Because of if Stamkos can score at 0.75 a game. If Kucherov comes in and, 1.2 points a game, mm-hmm. then, you've got the foundation. You've done it. Yep. You just did it. But, I think it's more difficult than people realize to bring everyone together.
Battle of Florida is going to be epic. I love that we're finally getting
best matchup
several years. Yep.
Best matchup in the first round. Yep. Best matchup.
How about Nashville?
Nashville is,
yeah.
I hate to, they've always been, along with another team we'll get to later, and I'll bring it up when I bring that up, they've always been nondescript to me, and they remain that way to me, so don't have it.
Yeah, I don't know how much to read into how they played Carolina at the end of the regular season, but they beat them 5-0 the other night, and they had a pretty exciting win before that. I don't know, that's a team that I know very little about going into the postseason. I will say this, and maybe that winds up being an advantage. I don't know. How about in the East, Pittsburgh?
Wow. just, I mean, I'm surprised by how well they did. I don't think it was a question in my mind they were a playoff team. I did not think they were going to win the division. It's just something that, man, it's the last stand. How's that? It's the last stand. And maybe when it's the last stand, maybe that's when you play your best.
It's like Detroit in their final cup year, maybe? I didn't feel like that was necessarily their last stand, but, I mean, in hindsight, it turned out to be. I don't know. It's interesting, the goaltending tandem there, too, between Jari and DeSmith. Like, the torch just keeps getting passed. But you're right. They wind up winning a division where I don't think a lot of people thought for. And they had a terrible start to the year, but turned it around.
It's legitimate. It's not even a theory. If goaltending is it, then that just slaps you right in the face when you look at Pittsburgh. You're not sure.
Washington.
How they've done it is, I think, a little bit of that old style again. It's just big and skilled, but big too. And that's where they get it done. Goaltending, not answered yet. So another question mark there.
Team chemistry, I'm wondering.
A little too old. I don't know.
Can you ever? Ovechkin is not known as like a huge playoff performer either as a star on that team. And the guy a couple years ago when they won the cup was Kuznetsov, remember? And he's been got into a little bit of hot water with the team recently, like violation team rules, COVID protocol breach.
Well, to the point where they're considering, he's not going to be back.
Yeah.
But again, I look at that as kind of a Stamkos situation or a Kucherov situation where if he can refocus for the playoffs, it's all of a sudden you're getting a player that probably wasn't even nowhere near his best.
Yeah.
When they won, I thought he was the MVP. Not Ovechkin.
I don't think you're alone in that.
It was nice for Ovi to get it. Voting.
Who knows how Mantha's going to turn out in the postseason. That was the big trade deadline pickup for Washington. How about the New York Islanders? I guess you know what you're going to get with New York, but is it good enough to get out of that division?
No. Always a chance, though. Always a chance because of their approach. They never beat themselves. I hate to say it this way because this is complete. How do you say it without disrespect? If they win, I don't want to see how you build a team. Sorry, Lou, you've already won billions of Stanley Cups and Barry Trotz. There's no more respected guy in the National Hockey League. But as you can tell, I'm talking about their front office and not their players.
Yeah. Hey, it's the ultimate team in a team game.
Yes,
right?
It is.
And they do have a dancer up front with Barzal, and a potential Vezina candidate. We'll talk about that with Varlamov.
Recent healthy scratch, Mr. Barzal.
Yeah. Well, that was. That's trying to send a message.
Refocus, yes,
that's old
guys.
School. That's very Lou Lamoriello, isn't it? let's go to the North.
We forgot a team.
Boston. Sorry. Boston.
Bruins.
Your Boston Bruins. That's right, Bobby Orr.
Back in Bobby Orr days.
Yeah, sorry.
We're just the anniversary a day ago. So
yeah, that's right.
Of the flying through the air goal. So
yeah. What did we think of Boston?
Yeah, I've always thought they're a well-oiled machine. So I think in the playoffs they can be effective. My opinion on Taylor Hall, which is not a positive one overall. If he even goes close to what he did in the regular season in the playoffs. The one thing I'm seeing with Boston right now is this, Alex, is when I see them watch, when I see the players watch Taylor Hall, I think they believe to themselves that this is a new piece that we didn't have before. And it gives us a better chance. So if mental approach has anything to do with it, Boston took a stride ahead for me.
I think the only question I have is in goal. Rask is a year older. And there's been kind of a three-way battle. I mean, certainly for the number two job there between Swayman and Halak. I don't know if that'll come into play, but given how I expect the schedule to be compressed almost to the point like it was in the bubble, like I expect back-to-back games a whole bunch in the postseason with a travel day and then maybe a rest day, but like it's going to be compressed again. You're going to need that number two goalie.
You're going to need him.
They haven't sorted that out. All right, now we'll go to the north here. Toronto.
I think they've taken the strides to add the players a la Tampa Bay did last year. I think they took the strides. I think they, you know, Simmons, Joe Thornton, you know, those guys, even Spezza, who was at it a while ago longer, but just you know, they're playing with a little bit more of an edge. So I just so respectful for their style they play, you know, and it's the anti-New York Islanders. So, you know, I'm hoping for them. If there's, I guess I shouldn't be a fan in this instance.
But they're trying to be. I see the Maple Leafs trying to be like Tampa was, where they got a lesson when they got swept by Columbus, and I think the Leafs got a lesson when they got beat by Columbus that they need to be able to grind a little bit more. They need to be able to just hang with a team when they're not having success and find a way to win, and maybe you bring in a little bit of grit to do it. The question is goaltending. Freddie Anderson's been hurt. Jack Campbell had that great run, but unproven in the postseason. And what's there behind the two of them? Because you know, neither of them have been healthy the whole year. So where do you go from there? That's my big
question. Can they outscore their mistakes? That'll be the issue, and I just go back, if I can, just Mike Babcock's statement on Mitch Marner, which is interesting because was probably the thing that blew everything out of the water. But his description of Mitch Marner is one of the best descriptions I've ever heard a coach use on any player. He says, when Mitch Marner gets the puck, the rink gets bigger. Mm. He can just use it so well. And I know Matthews gets I think the catalyst is Marner.
How about Edmondson?
Oh, I question their goaltending. Although, you know, they're okay. Probably better than okay, but... it's the easy thing, you know, stop one guy, you stop the team. And do you play McDavid with Dreisaitl? And if you don't, maybe you have a better chance. It's just such a wild card for me. A guy who I think is really, and I love it because if I have any read on any players whatsoever, it's when Darnell Nurse played his first game in the NHL. He played against the Kings at Staples Center, and he was all over the place, all over the place. I think he was minus 12 that night, and he just had – but you could tell this kid was going to be a player. You could tell it. He just wanted it. And he'll have to carry the load, I mean a huge load. The value of Nurse, I think, is in the playoffs – might equal the value of McDavid just because of that positional strength that you need at playoff time.
And the question for them is depth. Like, all right, you have McDavid, Dreisaitl, RNH. After that, what do you have? Winnipeg.
Yeah, disappointing. The way they ended the season.
Mm-hmm. They're free falling end of the season. They might not, as we taped, they might not even keep the three seed,
right? So the attrition they've gone through back on the blue line over the last 2 years, it's just tough to make up. It's just tough to get back. It's tough to replace. I mean, it's a similar situation happened for different circumstances, but you know, Byfuglien and Voinov. Byfuglien was probably their number one. Voinov was the Kings' number two, and you kind of lose them for nothing. I know that's going way back, so to speak, but it hurts. It's tough to replace.
I look at Hellebuck in goal, and I say he had an underratedly good year. with a team around him, like you say, with a blue line that's just thin, and he still put up numbers that were comparable to last season. And he appeared in 43 out of a possible, how many have they played as we tape this? 54. Can you ever discount a goalie that good? Former Vezina winner? That's the way I view Winnipeg. They could steal that series.
Yeah. He's the answer to your Pittsburghs and to the Washingtons, as I brought up. It's, you know, any team that has question marks in goal, he's probably the answer to that. Yeah. He takes his team to the next level because of that position.
Montreal.
Yeah, I like them. I like the way they approach the game. I think they're a balanced team with nothing that you would consider superstar-ish. I like their approach to the game. I don't think they have enough to beat Toronto. I don't, I just don't think they're going to have enough there.
Is this a situation, though, kind of like the bubble last year where they walked in feeling like they had nothing to lose? Like, the bottom line for them was they had to make the postseason. But now that they're in, and nobody is going to pick them against the Leafs.
Yeah, that's the, but I think the other way, Alex, in that, I don't think they're a favorite to make or win the division or anything like that. But because of the market and because of the stage the franchise is in and because of how long the GM has been there, I think there is – maybe the players won't feel it because you're right. The underdog status is unquestioned. But I think as a franchise, there's a lot of pressure there, more so than most markets. And for that reason, I don't think they're going to kind of go under the radar. It's unfair to expect anything, but and I've talked about Montreal in the context of closer to the playoffs, further from the Stanley Cup. They're a team that's they just felt they had to get in this year. They had to get in. Now they're in. They've done that. I don't think they're getting anything else.
Question for me is what that series is going to look like. Is if they lose, are they getting swept? Are they, pushing it to seven? Like, what does the series look like? And I think even then, even if it's a first round exit, you can still determine whether or not it was a step in the right direction for Montreal. And I'm not looking at their head to head records. Like, there's nothing that stands out really other than going 6-0-3 against the Canucks. It'll be an uphill battle, but stranger things have happened. How about the West? Vegas. As of right now, and again, things could change, they do not control their own destiny for the number one seed. And that might be a huge determining factor of how far they actually go in the postseason.
If we expect the schedule to be the way it is, a 2-3 matchup is going to be hard. And then what do you have left for the next one? If the schedule, maintains a, every other night, okay, series is over, boom, 2 nights later, jump into the next year, that type of thing, which we all think it probably will be. Generally speaking, Vegas, Colorado, I think they're above. Even though Minnesota is right there, I think they're above everyone else. I think Vegas's approach lends itself to playoff success more than Colorado's. But I'm so intrigued. Whatever happens there, I'm just hoping that it's a Vegas-Colorado second round. That's all.
Oh, that would be that
just
outstanding.
It's a matchup. It's not a contrast in styles, but there's a few differences there. When you take a look at, goal differentials and things of that sort, they're pretty even. As I look at, you think of Colorado as the dynamic, they've only scored one goal more than Vegas. Now that's with one less game played. So let's say they've scored four more goals than Vegas. So it's not like they're blowing everyone else out of the water. Vegas's goals against are, way down.
They both have good goaltending.
Yes. I guess proven to me is still, and that's, we've talked about that recently on air because we've been playing Colorado quite a bit. You know, I can't lock my head around Grubauer as a guy I trust. Sorry, that's just me. I can't. He just doesn't give me that Stanley Cup vibe. But then again, you know, Colorado doesn't give the other team the puck either. So that makes it tough to score.
Helps when you have the puck.
Exactly.
I view this as, I completely agree. Do they have anything left in the tank? And that a lot will be determined by which first round opponent they get. If it's St. Louis, I think we're all in agreement that it would be an uphill battle for the Blues. And, you know, Vegas will, they don't have a salary cap to worry about in the postseason. They can play as many guys and swap guys in and out of the lineup as they please. But the ones who have been in there every single night, what do they have left in the tank? That'll be the big question mark for the Golden Knights. And like you, I would love to see a Vegas-Colorado second round series if it comes to that, because I think it would be outstanding hockey. How about the Avs? We just saw them. We're about to see them again.
Yeah. I like the strides they've taken. I still think they have the window open for a year or two more. You know, they're going to run into the cap issues like everyone else, but I'll tell you what, they give, now that I've seen them a lot lately, I think we spoke probably a month ago and I was very much Vegas. I'm now a tad Vegas, a margin Vegas. I think Colorado, like we were talking the other night, Kadri is kind of like their third line centerman. And when he needs to, he can dangle. When he needs to. They don't need him to a lot of times. They just need him to shut it down and play tough and play edgy. And so, you know, back on the blue line, if they can get any health there, any sustained health, you know, and again, a lot of times you would say, okay, that first round, you know, you're bringing guys back who've missed a lot of time near the end of the year. They're going to bring them back. They need some games to get under their belt. You don't have that luxury. You just don't. The 2-3 matchup. So that's where Colorado, you know what? The Kings are going to be playing a hungry team the last two games of the schedule.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
They're going to want those games.
Oh, yeah. My question for Colorado, are they physical enough? And, you know, the guys who've played on the blue line instead of the injured players have been fairly physical and fairly rugged. That would be my only issue.
No, if you bring, say Girard gets back.
Yeah.
Then you have Taves, Makar, and Girard.
Yeah.
You got three undersized guys there.
Mm-hmm.
You got a Norris Trophy candidate in that. But,
you do. Timmons and O'Connor have been fine, and all these other guys that they've mixed and matched. And
it's back to the mix, though, right? It's back to the mix. Is it? You know, you can't have all dancers.
Right, right. How about Minnesota?
Well, if there was a Stanley Cup to award to a team before the playoffs started, it would be the Minnesota Wild for me. I just love what they've done. Along with the Predators, I always thought of Minnesota as a nondescript team, no identity. And that now is completely going out the window. I love what they've done. Who doesn't? Feel good story, solid balance, skill.
Mm-hmm.
And now, and I'm going to, one player has given them a chance to be an identity, to have an identity.
I agree. I completely agree.
Kaprizov has come in there and done that. He has, and I'm foreshadowing some stuff for later on. So.
Yeah, I know. But it's amazing, right? In a team game, and we talk all the time about, well, one player doesn't make a team. One player seemed to change that team overnight.
It's similar to me, Alex, and this is a whole season context as opposed to an end of season context, but I see the Minnesota Wild players looking at Kaprizov the same way the Boston Bruins players are looking at Taylor Hall right now.
Mm-hmm.
In that, ooh, this guy gives us a chance. This guy can win a game by himself every once in a while. You know, you can't rely on that all the time because, you know, one guy's not going to do it all the time. But I just see the look in the eyes of his teammates, and they know he's for real. I think in Boston, they're still concerned whether Hall's for real. But the way he's played, they're going, we didn't have this before, guys. Mm-hmm. We didn't have this. And now we have it. Let's make sure we use it.
also Minnesota can hit. If I recall, the qualifying round series between them and Vancouver was the most violent in the bubble. It was very, very physical. One last one, and then we got to go on to the awards. St. Louis.
Yeah. Soft spot in my heart for them because of Dave Taylor's connection with the Blues. Got a chance because recent winners of the Stanley Cup, they believe they can win it. They believe they have the style that can change, you know, in the playoffs, or they keep playing the same way where other teams might have to change a little bit. They don't change. I think there's holes there, though. I just think there's holes. I think they're trying to incorporate more skill. I think right now some of those skill players in St. Louis that they're trying to incorporate, which they need to do, the younger guys, but I think there's a few holes in their games. And it just creates a, you know, a feeling of, you know, it's just, you know, Petrangelo is no longer there. Pareko's back up. Pareko is just, he is the man. He is a key. He is a key, especially in the playoffs.
If he's healthy.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that continues to be the case, because neck, back, anything in that area, it's, you're always a little bit worried. All right. End of season award time. Now, for context, a couple of episodes ago, you proposed an award structure for this year whereby most awards would be given on a divisional basis because we can't compare them across divisions since there was no interdivisional play. So are you going to be giving your awards based on division? Because I'm trying to narrow them down just one for the whole league.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with divisional, but, you know, I'll add.
All right. All right. Let's start right off the hop here. I think the easiest one for everybody, Calder Trophy. Is it Kaprizov versus Robertson, and Kaprizov just gets the edge at this rate?
Okay, well, I'm going to go with two. I'm going to go Kaprizov. For sure, number one. I'm going to go Michael Bunting now. He's only played 21 games, but he has 10 goals in 21 games, and he's in the West.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of, you know, I saw him, what effect he had on a team that I think, again, that's another nondescript team in Arizona, unfortunately, in my mind. But he just gave me something that was a little bit different. And then, of course, Arcadia's own Jason Robertson in Dallas.
Great story.
You know, great story. And, you know, it's a team that, you know, they're looking for someone like that to take the next step, right? They needed that. And, you know, just very consistently, it looked like just kept going. But, you know, you need to, the Kaprizov issue is, it is his skill level. It is his compete level, but it's also the effect he has had on his team.
I look at it too, and the only controversy might be that he comes from the KHL and he's playing against men there. Jason Robertson is younger, but I still view it as, I mean, the NHL is its own animal, and you're still new to this league and you're new to your team. And frankly, I don't care. He was that dynamic. And you know what, too? Because start to finish, it's not just scoring, it's clutch scoring. And I wanted to, because early in the year, we saw Minnesota at the beginning of the season, and Kaprizov factored in both game-winning goals for the Wilds. I had a hunch that would continue. I looked it up. 12 goals in the third period this year. And again, there are a couple games left for other teams that are involved in this. That is tied for third most in the NHL, two behind Brad Marchand for most in the league. And Minnesota still has a couple games to play yet. So Kaprizov could lead the league in third period goals this year. That to me is
impact.
When you need a goal.
Yeah. He's had the same effect on the Wild that Panarin had on the Rangers. And he's doing it in his first year. To the rules issue, as far as, you know, do you qualify? How about this? If you play in a professional league, right? Non-North American professional league. After you're 21 years old,
Just change.
Don't hold it against Kaprizov now. You have to vote by the rules as they exist.
Sure.
You don't have to. You vote any way you want to vote. That's why you get the vote, or everyone gets an individual vote. I think it would be unfair to hold that against him. So I'm proposing, if you want to do something, then amend the rules. Amend the eligibility rules. And then we can talk.
I think the eligibility rules are just fine.
I think it could be, I think it could be moved down again. I really do. I do think the age, or again, like people are talking, playing in pro leagues, I think that can be moved down a little bit more.
All right. Well, I mean, either way, still young, he's still dynamic. I think we're all in agreement here. Let's do the Vezina Trophy here. A couple interesting choices, and maybe this one does have to go along divisional lines, because there was so much talk this year about, naturally it happens when you split off into different they're autonomous leagues, right? You know, you had the West playing against all West Conference teams, or West Division teams. You had the North that was widely criticized as having the weakest goaltending. But as I just looked up with Connor Hellebuck, his numbers weren't bad, relatively speaking. How are you going about this?
Well, I'm going to stick with my, so I'm going Marc-Andre Fleury.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it in the West, I'm going Grubauer, trying to give him respect, even though earlier I just didn't. But then, I'm perusing the numbers and trying to, he plays it for an up-tempo attacking team, but we know that they have the puck a lot, and so that helps him. But does it hurt him? I mean, you're standing there for periods of 10 to 12 minutes at a time, and you don't see a puck. You really don't, the way they play. And so, that's where I go there. In the past, I've sided with Carey Price on years where he even had down numbers, but that was basing it on what I heard from general managers, coaches, and players. And even though the numbers don't kind of add up there, then if there's something outside, I would go with Vasilevsky.
I looked at those numbers again, and he played more than, I think, any other goaltender this year other than Hellebuck. 42 starts. Yeah, he was a workhorse again.
I look at a team like, Varlamov's not.
Yeah, is that the team or the goalie?
Yeah, so that's why I kind of, I'm trying to separate that.
I think I'm going to put Fleury up there as much as, Grubauer. Yeah, he had to be good when, Fleury, should I put this in my voting that he's 36 and he's still near the top of the league and all this? Like, should I add that as a bonus?
That's the anti Kaprizov.
Exactly. He started 35, save percentage in the top 10, 5 shutouts this year. And he's probably the oldest in that age category, and age shouldn't matter. I don't want to be
ageist. There's a solid
ageist
team around him, so he benefits from that. But who doesn't?
I'd have a hard time going against Fleury, Vasilevsky too, just because of the work and because of the even larger sample size of 42 starts in a 56 game season. That's intense. So I guess my answer would have to be Fleury, maybe just because I saw him more. I don't know. At the risk of groupthink, as we look at the Norris Trophy, how much should we weight Victor Hedman based on the team that's around him?
This year, not as much as in past, because again, they've had some issues to deal with as far as who's available. I'll be honest with you. I have 3 or 4 or 5 names on my list and he's not on it.
Okay. Let's hear it.
He's not on it.
Let's hear it.
Well, I'm going Cale Makar, best defenseman I've seen this year. I'm going Drew Doughty. I'm keeping it in the West. I think he's right back to a level that he is top 10 in the National Hockey League. If I were to go outside, I would go Dougie Hamilton in Carolina. Just love, could be a wild horse at times. But that's that. Carolina plays up. They want to keep going. And the guy to me that I think is, if I were to put the whole league involved, he might get my vote, and that's Chris Letang.
Chris Letang, I did not expect that.
It's just I'm looking at the injuries that were suffered in that team, and then they end up winning their division, and you know, their goaltenders probably didn't steal them a lot of games. You know, someone's got to settle things down there. Hmm.
And that's certainly leaning more on the defensive side of the award. I mean, it's an award on kind of the all-around aspect of the position. So I'm glad in a sense that the talk about Hedman has died down, because I thought it was just way too easy. It was, oh, Victor Hedman? Yeah, of course. So I've got my leader for each division here. I wound up just, and these, I just wrote down these names, and then I realized, oh, it is one from each division.
Oh, good.
Adam Fox led the NHL in scoring among defensemen, 13th in block shots. Darnell Nurse, 16 goals. That's
Love
second
him.
Among defensemen. And he
Love
eats
him.
Up minutes, and he plays heavy minutes.
Love him.
Cale Makar. Now, he was injured for a little bit, so there is that. But he led all defensemen in the league 5-on-5 Corsi 4 this year. And then there is Dougie Hamilton. 7th fewest goals on ice per 60 minutes. And he's top 10 in points among defensemen. And if I'm looking at both sides of the position, I mean, Fox not on a playoff team. Nurse probably not as much of a defensive defenseman as Hamilton or Makar even. And I like Hamilton's game. I really do. And I think Carolina deserves it.
Watching Colorado recently has taken me over the top with Makar, because, you know, I still don't see him enough. And I know he was hurt this year, and that's going to hurt him in the voting. I'm just going for who I think is the best defenseman.
Sure.
And his work in the neutral zone against the Kings recently, and I think his understanding of time and space and gap control, which he can get away with because he flies out there. I just thought he broke up more plays than I ever expected him to. I thought he was in the right position. Now, the only thing I would have to do if I were really, you know, voting for this, I would really break down some of his tape and see his one-on-ones in the corners. That's all I would. That's the only concern I would have. And that's that. I'm just throwing that out there because I've seen his footwork stop, start, back, forth. He's tough to beat one-on-one there, too. So,
yeah.
I think he's
so
the best
positionally
sound.
I think he's the best. He like even in corners, right? He's still positionally sound because he can skate so well.
Yeah. And I have him as the Connor McDavid of defensemen.
Yeah.
With the puck. Man, like I said the other night on the air, if it's possible to skate faster with the puck than without the puck, he's right there with McDavid.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to it then. Hart Trophy.
Well, I'm going to stay divisional here initially. Okay. And I'm going to give you my candidates. MacKinnon, Colorado, stands out, drives the pace, drives the pace for a high pace team. Mr. Stone in Vegas. I don't know any player that does more things positively for his team. I'm just going by what I'm going here as my value. And here's where you're going to be surprised. It's Kirill Kaprizov.
No. You would do that.
Value.
Yeah.
He
value
has
to your team or value to the league. That's the thing.
Single-handedly, he has turned that franchise around. That's disrespecting Bill Guerin's input. That's disrespecting Dean Evason's input. That's disrespect, you know, but I just want to get my point across. I want to exaggerate. I think single-handedly, he has changed how that franchise is looked upon by everyone else. And more importantly, he has changed how they look upon themselves internally. Who's going to win it? Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Which is a solid, excellent choice. Value, though. Value. Where was Minnesota before Kaprizov?
Yeah. You know, I'm supposed to argue with you, but you know what? That's a compelling case. That's a really compelling case.
And they're knocking on the door at the top of the division. They're not going to get there. They can't. Now, you know, numbers say they can't.
Sure. But, I mean, would they have been there without him? That's a serious question. You brought it up. Well, would they have even been in the conversation?
No. Would they even be in the playoffs?
That's another good point. That's a really good point. I mean, I was looking at kind of, oh, you know, the McDavid, Stone, maybe Crosby because of where Pittsburgh's at, you know, sure. But you know what? I agree. I think McDavid will win it because how could you vote against a player who cracked 100 points in a 56-game season?
Yeah. You know, on a team that needs to outscore its mistakes.
Right, right.
And other teams know that, and you still can't stop them.
Hmm. Yeah. I skipped over the Selke Trophy, by the way. Thank you. Not as interesting a race this year. I mean, is there any argument against Mark Stone? Maybe O'Reilly?
No. Yeah. Two solid guys. I'd go Stone because we see him again, keeping with my theory, keep it in the division. You know, those two guys are just, you know, interesting. I think that the Selke has morphed into a trophy that is not awarded to the definition of its trophy, should be.
Yeah. Because if you were strictly looking at defensive forwards, you'd be looking at a lot more third and fourth line shutdown type players.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's more of a two-way award.
And that's
now.
Okay. It's evolved. Maybe they can tweak the definition.
Well, I mean, defensive forward, there are two components to this, right? You still have to play forward. And you still have to be competent at that position and not just worry about the defensive side of it. Yep. But yeah, I agree. All right, two more. And here's one. Okay, I'll go with the one that we don't vote on first. The Jim Gregory Award, GM of the Year. There are a lot of good choices this year.
A lot of good choices. I mean, there's a ton.
I'll list off a short list. How about that? I've got Dubas, McCrimmon, Don Waddell, Bill Guerin. That's my short list.
Yeah, I'm on the bandwagon. I'm going to go Bill Guerin. I'm staying with Minnesota. And you know, we realize that a lot of these awards are given due to expectations and whether you exceed them. You know, Kyle Dubas does fit there. He fits because, you know, as much as the personnel is unquestioned, there's still those question marks about Toronto and Kent. And I think Dubas made those little tweaks, right?
And in that market, too. Yeah. Can we discount the fact that it's, you know, the pressure tough. That's on you?
Yeah, it's tough. And that's where, you know, Bergie in Montreal, that's what I was talking about earlier, just maybe forced upon him to make decisions just to, you know, get it done. But no, that those are, you know, again, I think Carolina has been, you know, being built for a while. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's tough to, you know, single in 1 year on that. But, you know, again, the 1 year change to me would be Billy Guerin in Minnesota. Yeah.
Under the radar, too, is Don Sweeney in Boston for pulling off the Taylor Hall trade.
Yeah.
Maybe that.
I mean, as much, again, I'm not a Taylor Hall fan. And
you still got him for a discount.
I would admit, though, right now that he is changing my mind. And I think, you know, sometimes that veteran team circumstance where he has to fit himself into them as opposed to the other way around.
Could you go against Lou Lamoriello even and with the Islanders?
No, you know, again, I would.
There are so many names this year.
Yeah. Like Lou Lamoriello's teams don't really come to mind in awards at all, but maybe that's where he gets the award.
Sure. Yeah,
because exactly. They get it done in a certain way. They get it done his way. And I think he's proven to get it done.
I view it. Because if I had to come down on one, I might have to go with Don Waddell just because it's a culmination of that building project for a good 3-4 years.
Yeah.
Of how good Carolina is right now.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's necessarily that, you know, in it, this 1 year it was deserved over the others, but I mean, they're contenders for the Stanley Cup this year, and they're going to be for a good little while here. All right. How about the award that we both vote on through the NHL Broadcasters Association, the Jack Adams Award? Now, I think to your point, Jim, too often this award goes to a coach that exceeds low expectations. The ones that I've got on my list are kind of similar. Again, exceeding high expectations. Guys like Bednar with all the injuries, Sheldon Keefe in Toronto, Joel Quenneville, the Panthers, Rod Brind'Amour in Carolina. Like, all these guys had high expectations and they met or exceeded them.
I go, and I'm going to go in the order 3-2-1.
Sure.
And to me, number three is Joel Quenneville. I think he has, you know, they've been waiting for this move. And he was there last year, but, you know, it takes, I just think he's, and that's why I still think they're still knocking on the door. But I think it wouldn't surprise me if Joel gets them over the top, not this year, but coming up. Number two to me is Mike Sullivan. Injury situations plus general manager being replaced during the season, and he still gets his team to win a division. That is dealing with circumstances that are difficult to do. And it's very obvious where I'm going for my choice as the winner, and that would be Dean Evason of the Minnesota Wild. I think that the GM, Billy Guerin, did a good job, but he brought in four or five different pieces this year. You know, even outside of Kaprizov. And I think Evason flies under the radar because I think we've dealt with him a little bit, right? He's not the most boisterous guy. He doesn't toot his own horn. He doesn't care. He just gets it done. And I'm very impressed. And I'm also impressed now that that team has an identity. And I think Dean is part of that.
Yeah, I like that. And I liked, I wasn't even thinking about Mike Sullivan. But again, it's, you know, Penguins team that wasn't expected to win that division. I think I have to go with Joel Quenneville in Florida.
Yeah.
And I go back to the first game they played this season. Remember Keith Yandel and the Iron Man streak that was almost snapped? He was almost benched for the first game. And they had a COVID pause in Dallas that prevented that first game from happening on time. Lo and behold, Keith Yandel was back in the lineup for their actual season opener against Chicago, and hasn't been taken out since. And I look at the, you know, managing a group like that, because it could get ugly fast if your group is unhappy with the treatment of a player, or if a certain player doesn't like the circumstances. And Florida, a team that had, you know, they swung for the fences, I'm going to say, you know, a year or two ago by signing Bobrovsky and, you know, keeping this right. They were up against the cap last year. And then there was a thought that the front office was going to have to cut payroll. And they lost a player or two, and they've had to be acting the trade market. And Quenneville, steady hand.
He fits. He also fits exceeding expectations.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everyone looked at their team and said talent, but I don't think they thought team. And I think Joel has made it about the team.
Should we do a Stanley Cup pick? Should we pick a champion?
Sure.
Okay.
We got a lot of chances of being wrong, right?
A ton of chances of being wrong. Don't place a bet on us. If you're in a state where gambling's legal, don't do that on our recommendation. What's fascinating about this year, and you know, there's no way of keeping this again, is the fact that none of these teams have played cross division. So once you get to the Final Four, there is no way of knowing which style of play is going to be better and which team is even going to get out of the four teams in their divisional rounds. I look at voting with your head or voting with your heart here. I think the Colorado Avalanche.
Woo!
I mean, and we still got two games against them this week. I think that team has all the tools. Now, granted, are there question marks? Sure, but and granted, I haven't seen Carolina play much. I haven't seen Florida play all that much. I haven't seen Pittsburgh play all that much. But I just, this division wound up being a weak division. Let's be honest. St. Louis is, you know, probably the weakest of the 16 playoff teams, right there with Montreal, most likely.
Nashville. Nashville.
Yeah, Nashville. They're there too.
Winnipeg.
Yeah, they're you know, now that I think about it, there are some weak fourth place teams or teams that squeaked in. But I mean, the bottom of the West, not good.
Yes. Which could inflate the records of the tops.
Right. But by eye test, well, if Colorado can do, and they beat Vegas the other night, if they can do what they did to us and beat Vegas the other night, woof, they'll be the one getting out of the four in our division. And the only question then becomes goaltending.
Yeah.
But that's my pick.
And the question to me is, the team I'm going to pick is about goaltending. And that's unfortunate, but that's the concern I have. If I were to go with my heart, just because of how I know people feel about it, I would go with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, buddy. Oh, buddy.
That's my heart. But that's not going to do it yet. Still put them right there. Oh. I'm going to go with the Carolina Golden Knights.
Yeah.
How's that?
Be an interesting Stanley Cup final.
Yeah. So that's where I'm going. Or I could go with the Vegas Hurricanes.
Mm.
But I just don't want to say the team in our division.
No, I know. I know. I hate saying it too. But Colorado's not going to be in our division next year. So we can say it and not have any guilt about
it. Travel. How can they not be in our division? Let's get rid of those Canadian teams.
How many years?
Come on.
Hey, Arizona's getting kicked out too. Why don't we pour one out for the Arizona Coyotes?
Man, we can drive to both of those cities.
Last year in the division, no more time warps where we get back after a Coyotes game and we get back earlier than we would have if we played at Staples Center.
It takes longer to go through customs in Vancouver than it does to fly to Colorado.
What to tell you? But you get Seattle next, and that'll be fun. When's the last time you've been to Seattle? Have you ever been to Seattle?
I will answer it this way. I don't know if I've ever been there, which tells you how much effect it's had on me if I was there, which tells me I probably wasn't there. Probably flew in, but then was connecting somewhere else.
It is going to be such a great hockey town, and I'm excited to have them in our division. I'm excited to have another team in the same time zone. Sorry, Arizona. I just love Seattle as a city. It's a good town. All right, Jimmy, anything before we wrap up here?
Oh, is this it?
This is it.
This is it.
Unless we have one more, which I don't know if we will or not, but that just goes to show how much organization we put into this.
You know, all I would do is, you know, ask for Kings fans to give us a little bit more patience, which is tough to do. I think they're right there. I've mentioned it on air, and I have some analytic numbers to back it up, but just how I don't, you know, the number of points the Kings were able to generate this year in the standings probably doesn't add up to 70% of the season anyway, which is a good sign, right? You're supposed to hang in until it's important. The Kings hung in until it's important, but when it was important, they did not produce. They did not. So that's your evaluation right there. It did not happen when you hoped it would happen. And so I'm just, you know, patience, but I got a little pit in my stomach here of excitement of, you know, something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I just have it.
It's coming. It's coming.
Something.
What it is, I don't know, but it's coming.
And I'm just talking about, something that is not a draft pick. It's not a normal progression of a player developing.
Sure.
Just something else. And like you said, I can't put my finger on it. But so that's, you know, and again, I heard Rory McIlroy speak the other day after one of his golf tournament. And he said he didn't think he was going to miss the fans. And it's And then he said he needed the fans. And this is an individual sport.
Mm-hmm.
I've played golf my whole life. Maybe that's why I'm not good at it, but I don't put momentum into golf. Like, you know, sink a birdie putt and then the fans get you going and you go to the next. More than a team sport, but I'm just going to roll off of Rory. And just the last two or three games, the first couple were really quiet and really odd, but now I know what it feels like to have everyone in the building. And it's something that if any sport needs it, it's hockey. And so let's hope everything goes according to plan here. And, you know, I really appreciate the Kings fans who felt that, you know, they were comfortable coming. I understood the fans that weren't comfortable. I'm still uncomfortable in a lot of situations, even though I've been vaccinated and I'm around only people who have been vaccinated. Still uncomfortable. That's me. That's my individual choice or feeling. But I appreciate the fans that were able to come back and see us and cheer us on. And again, you know, can you put the team in a bad context? There's going to be something for Andre next year, right? With people in the stands.
Yeah.
You know, they had to do the 1,000th game now. And I thought, we talked about it right after it happened, Alex. I thought it was one of the best ceremonies the Kings have ever done. But I just hope next year there's a chance. And maybe you combine a few milestones that happened and you have a night where you can, you know.
Drew's got 1,000 games coming up.
Yeah, you know, something like that. And then, but then you kind of take away from his night. It's tough but I just hope there's another night.
We'll have some Legends nights, I'm sure, coming back.
Yeah, find a way to make sure that it's a full building.
Yep.
You know, when we get a chance to recognize such an achievement.
Yep, I agree. And maybe there'll be a plaque somewhere or something, you know. Well, I have no idea, but yeah, I'm with you on that. First of all, your golf game is really good. Let's just put that to bed. This was a weird season. Let's not do it again. I will say one thing about fans being in the building is I think from day one, I missed just even the simple gesture of somebody coming up and saying hello and just striking up a conversation. I mean, when we went to work and we called games and we were the only ones there, I mean, it was still hockey. But it wasn't that's not why we're in this sport. It's not why we're in this business. Because, you know, I've done plenty of things where, you know, I'm in a studio and, you know, I'm not around other fans. You know, I do tennis in the summers and that's fine. But you're in it to go to the big event. You're in it to you know, be part of something bigger. And I finally, you know, seeing that light at the end of the tunnel, having fans back in the building was... I'm glad we were able to do that. Let me tell you, it was not revenue neutral. It was a money losing proposition to have 2,000 fans at Staples Center, no doubt. But was it important to get people back and to show that it could be done and to just to start that engine again? You bet. And I cannot wait for it to be, if it's not a full house, then something close to it in the fall. And I'm more optimistic than ever that we will get there in this country and hopefully in Canada as well, because I think the ancestral home of this sport deserves to have a packed house singing "O Canada" at, let's say, the Bell Center in Montreal on a Saturday night in Hockey Night in Canada, and to give people those goosebumps at home again. That's what we all need with this sport.
We talked about it the other night on the air. I mean, it's a team sport, and without the fans, you lose that team atmosphere. It was nice seeing and watching other people have enjoyment and have fun, because the Kings fans that came have fun and they enjoy it, and it was just nice to see that happen.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, it just shows how much you appreciate something when it's taken away from you. And with that, we will end. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Thank you so much to our producer, Jesse Cohen, who puts in all the hard work to push these episodes out to you. It will be a fascinating and exciting Stanley Cup playoffs. Jimmy, you're doing games on radio. I'll be doing games for NBC Sports on TV. So you will still hear from us as the postseason rolls along, but we are excited to be back with you after a short offseason once again in October at Staples Center. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.